All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
This is NPR News, and I'm Angela Davis. Glad you're listening today. I don't know about you, but I don't always handle change very well. I like structure and predictability. And this past year has pushed me to my limits. Many of us are going through changes right now as we try to abide by the restrictions and recommendations brought on by the ever-changing COVID-19 pandemic. And during the last few weeks, many of us have seen our children go back to school, and in many cases, back to their classrooms for in-person instruction. Some of us have returned to our workplaces and to cubicles and offices that sat empty for months because of the pandemic. Buildings are now occupied with many more employees, and we know that some of those folks would rather still be working from home. And we've endured the back and forth of mask mandates and the alarm caused by the Delta variant of COVID. We are kicking off the new 9 a.m. talk show here on NPR News by talking about change and transition. All this week, I'll be leading conversations about life-changing events and what we can do to handle them better. I want to acknowledge and say hello to all the listeners who got to know me when I hosted the 11 a.m. hour here on NPR News. Thank you for your support and for joining me now at 9. And to those of you who are listening to me for the first time, hello to you. I look forward to hearing from you as we continue to take your phone calls. Yeah, we want to hear from listeners as we talk during the 9 a.m. hour. Let's get to today's conversation. I am in quite a mood and have been for weeks, and here is what's at the heart of it. I just became an empty nester. My son and daughter both moved out of the house and into their college dormitories back in mid-August. I am so proud of them, excited for them, and happy for them. But I also really miss them. I'm married and my husband and I are very close, but this empty nest thing is a big transition. And I know I'm not the only one going through this or who has gone through it. And so today I invited some guests to talk about empty nest syndrome. Babs Plunkett is on the line. She's a life coach here in the Twin Cities who specializes in helping people age gracefully with a particular emphasis on mothers facing an empty nest. Good morning to you, Babs.
Good morning. Congrats on your 9 a.m. show, Angela.
Thank you very much. Glad you could be with us. And we also have on the line Elizabeth Aredokun. And Elizabeth is a family therapist practicing in Edina. She goes by Dr. Liz. Hello to you, Dr. Liz.
Hello, hello, Angela. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
I am eager to hear from both of you. And I want to hear from our listeners, too, again, because I know you have stories, some advice, or maybe a point of view I have not considered just yet. Are you an empty nester? What are your plans? Did your kids fly the coop a while ago? Do you have any tips? The phone lines are open, and you can also tweet me. I'm at Angela Davis, NPR. Babs, let me start with you. I know this subject is close to your heart. It inspired your research for your book called Choose Joy. You focus on mothers facing an empty nest. And so why mothers specifically?
Well, I think that motherhood in general is a little bit dismissed in our culture. And so I'm kind of a fierce mama bear for the mamas. And because motherhood isn't as acknowledged in the sort of the role, how big the role is, when it comes time to retire from full-time motherhood, we don't speak of it. And so there isn't a place very often to talk about what a deep hole people can feel when that role of full-time motherhood, whether you have a job outside of the home or not, but when that full-time role is done, it really leaves a gap in our lives.
I love your word choice, deep hole. That is kind of what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not alone. And we just don't talk about it so much. And women feel a lot of things that I bet you're feeling. There's a loneliness missing your kids. There's a loss of purpose. There's a lack of structure in your typical day and week for all that we pour out for our kids.
And Dr. Liz, empty nesting is considered a syndrome because I'm told people move through it. So is it fair to say it's a transition rather than a destination?
Yes, that's a good question. You know, I definitely think it's fair to say it's a transition, right? We all go through transitions from motherhood, from giving birth, all the way up until, you know, they move out of the home. It's not really considered like a mental illness or, you know, it's just really described as a phenomenon or, like you said, a transition.
So I'm not always going to feel like I'm in this deep hole.
Oh, right. Most definitely.
And Dr. Liz, what would you describe as the characteristics of empty nest syndrome? How would you describe it?
Yeah, really just that sense of loss, right? You're grieving that certain role that you were so used to for 18 plus years, right? So you're grieving that loss, you're grieving that loss of purpose, right? And just feeling, okay, well, what do I do now? I have all this time on my hands. What do I do now? So it's really just that you're just kind of grieving, right? You're mourning the sense of that role that you once had.
But there's also, you know, this, again, this collision of emotions, because there's great pride. I mean, this is what mm-hmm. I wanted, right? I wanted them to leave. I wanted right. them to be able to take care of themselves, and they're doing that.
Most definitely. Right. Most definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, it's a mix of pride, of course, and sadness, but also some anxiety too, right? You know, this, especially when your last child is off to, or your first child is off to college, you know, not knowing what to expect. So there's some anxiety mixed in there too. Mm.
Well, as we talk about empty nesters, we are taking your phone calls, and let's go to the phone lines right now. And in Park Rapids, Beth has already called in. Beth, thank you for joining the conversation. What did you want to share?
Sure. I've been an empty nester for probably almost 10 years now. But during that transition, I had friends at work who talked about that feeling of, you know, kind of lostness and whatever. So I, about 2 years before my kids graduated from high school, I took on a new hobby of quilting. And as they left, I increased my quilting and I increased my involvement in the guild that I had joined. And so rather than feeling like I had lost something, what I did was add into my life.
And that helped a lot.
Oh, a ton, yeah. I mean, like when I'd get home from work, I'd be excited to go quilting and not worrying about where are my kids anyway.
Thank you, Beth. You know, one of the things I found very disorienting, just, you know, simple weekly chores like going to the grocery store. Instead of grabbing a big cart, I just need a basket, right? Or just running errands and doing things alone, whereas before maybe one of my teenage kids would have been with me. And it just feels really odd. Babs, do you hear that from, you know, other parents that you work with?
Absolutely. And your example of the grocery store is a classic one where you know, for me, I passed the strawberries and I wasn't throwing them in the cart for my daughter. You open the fridge and it's just this minimalistic tableau of nothing. And it represents the emptiness you feel because you're not filling it to, you know, welcome your friend's kids or feed your own kids. So absolutely, those sorts of day in and day out, little reminders. It's like that when you lose anybody, whether it's grieving your kids going off or, you know, losing a loved one.
And Dr. Liz, in your practice, do you find that there's a difference between how mothers and fathers respond to the empty nest?
Such a good question. Most definitely. What I'm used to seeing is the fathers being a little more, you know, laid back. Oh, you know, they'll be fine. But, you know, mothers, we've put in a lot of labor when it comes to, you know, emotional labor, physical labor for our kids, right? So they're going to feel that more. And I wonder if there's research on that, but I definitely see in my practice that fathers tend to be more laid back. But I do encourage the fathers to just, you know, support the mothers by just validating and just being there to support them during this time.
And Babs, have you seen that as well? The fathers who are responding to the empty nest, is there a difference in what they say and how they behave?
I've definitely spoken with dads who feel that same loss. So it exists. I hear it. I just hear it with greater depth and greater emotional intensity from women.
In St. Paul, Lisa's on the phone. Good morning, Lisa.
Hi, good morning. As I was listening, I was trying to figure out if something, am I kind of off? Because 2 weeks ago, our last two daughters moved out for college, and then they're like sharing an apartment. But I don't feel I'm trying to figure out, I don't feel like that grief that you guys were mentioning. I feel like this, like, great excitement of what's next. I feel like I've been preparing for this. But the kind of sadness I feel right now is, like, I had been thinking I'd be able to travel because my birthday's at the end of the month, but, like, out of caution, I kind of am putting that on hold. So that's kind of my sadness. But with the girls, we have six daughters, so these were our last two that just moved 2 weeks ago. And so I feel like a great sense of accomplishment, the pride that you're talking about, but and then the excitement of what's next. Like, I get to try my second act of what am I going to do, because I've been a stay-at-home mom for over 20 plus years. I don't want to say, but no, I will say I'm 52. And so, like, 30 years, I did mothering for over 30 years. And so there's this joy that I have, but I don't, my husband mentioned the grief, but I don't really feel that. So I'm trying to figure out, am I not processing this right, or what?
No, I think you're my new hero. You're my role model, Lisa, but you're right. I mean, you've done your work, you've prepared them, and now this is a reward for both for you and them, right?
Yeah. That's what I feel. So, like I said, my kind of sadness is I was like, I want to, you know, Hawaii, and then I want to do Africa. And so all of that's on hold because we're still transitioning out of this pandemic, hopefully soon. But so that's where my kind of sadness comes from. But the other part is there's just this joy of them, like my last little eaglet starting to fly. And, you know, so I don't know. That's where I am.
So you're excited about what the future holds, because you're still a mother, but you're the mother of young adults now.
Right. Totally.
I get it. I like that. What do you hear there in Lisa's story, Dr. Liz?
I really love, Lisa, that you mentioned that you've prepared for this, right? And I think when a lot of families come in to see me, we work a lot on just preparing for, you know, that life transition. But don't feel guilty, right, that you don't feel that grief. Not every parent, you know, feels that grief.
And, you know, I'm just wondering, I think what was difficult for me, what was more difficult was the preparing, the packing and what are you leaving? What do we need to buy? And just physically getting them there. The dread leading up to it was harder than when I actually said goodbye. Is that typical stories that you hear, Babs?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement. Well, I hear dread too. I hear both. I mean, I think we each process it in our own way. I think it's sort of the passage of time after, where you're excited, they're gone, and like, oh, they're really gone. Oh, that fridge is still empty. Oh, that once, you know, bedroom filled with dirty clothes now is all tidy, and it used to bug me, but oh, it feels sort of, you know, I see the emptiness and the cleanliness. So, you know, just like any sort of grieving, it hits you at unexpected moments. And so there's just little waves as you begin to adjust to your own transition and who do you want to become. And that takes time. It's a process. It's a transition, focusing on your own self and practicing focusing on your own self. Because I think for a lot of people, that's the thing that as mothers, we haven't done for years.
And what were we doing? I mean, I don't feel like I got lost. Like I still, you know, have friends and activities and a sense of purpose, but something shifted, something's different. And is it maybe just the availability of more time to do things that I used to just sort of like push like way down on my to-do list, that now there's nothing really stopping me from doing the things I say that I want to do. And that can be frightening. Dr. Liz?
Yeah, most definitely. Right. Like you've spent all those years, you know, parenting, raising your children, and you get to a point where, yeah, you have so much time on your hands. And it's not like you didn't have friends before, you didn't have a social life before, but now it's more time, right? So now it's like, how do I structure my day now that I don't, you know, have all these fillers when it comes to my kids? So I think that's normal.
Mm. And do you find that, you know, after the kids are actually gone, that some people, you know, that part of it was easier than this impending doom that they were perhaps feeling as they were approaching this time of life?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's different for every family, right? It's different for every parent. You know, some parents have that fear, like, oh, I'm not ready for my kids to go to college. I'm not ready to let go, right? So it can be scary for some parents, but as it happens, right, and they drop their kids off at school, it's actually not as bad. So I do believe that happens for some parents.
And I've tried to be very careful, too, in like what I allowed my son and daughter to see, because I didn't want them to worry about me. Like, I want them to be excited and happy, and, you know, they have enough to be, you know, stressed out about and starting new lives. But is that something that parents should keep in mind, that, you know, that your kids are looking to make sure that you're okay? Babs?
I think expressing your authentic emotions is always good, and to let them know how you feel, but that also you're showing that you can process through a hard transition too. They're scared. Mm-hmm. And I think it's always healthy to model, yeah, I can have these feelings and here's how I'm processing them and I'm going to be okay. It's okay to have hard feelings. You know, you face them and you work through them.
And Dr. Liz, should I be concerned about, or just be mindful that I'm not creating yet another problem for my young adult kids by causing them to worry about me?
Oh, yeah, that's a big one. I know with just the impact of anxiety on kids can be a lot. So I do think that that's something to definitely be mindful of. Like Bab said, it's great to, you know, show your emotion, but just, you know, to be mindful that, you know, they have their own experience too, and not to impact that with too much anxiety.
All right, let's talk to more of our listeners. Take another phone call as we talk about empty nesters, one of the big changes, transitions in life that some of us go through in Minneapolis. Johnny is on the line. Good morning, Johnny. What's your connection to this?
Good morning. Well, I raised three children, motherless children, raised them myself. And
that's quite an accomplishment. That's a lot.
They're all brilliant and successful at what they do. But when I had the empty nest, at the same time, I lost a 10-year girlfriend, and I was despondent. It was the end of the world. And I took the booze, just went down the rabbit hole.
Was it because the house was so quiet? What caused so much grief?
Because we were such a tight team. Mm-hmm. It was me and my three. We were such a tight unit. And to see my daughters go their separate ways, and my son, the youngest, he's 27 now. I lost my purpose in life. My purpose was, I'm your dad. Mm-hmm. And that's my identity.
Mm-hmm. And Johnny, are you in a different place now? Now that some time has passed, are things better?
Oh, things are much better. Yep, and I sold my house to my oldest daughter, who has two sons. So I got to visit them yesterday, and I see them all the time. I talk to them all the time. And yeah, it's a much better place now. But after I descended into alcoholism, you know, that had to stop. I was that depressed.
And you're sober now, it sounds
like. Yes.
Danny. And so what helped you? Was it making new friends? Was it trying to establish a new identity? What changed things for you? What turned it around?
Well, playing music. Mm. Mm-hmm. I used to play in two of my kids are band leaders, and I was a band leader too, mm-hmm. locally. And so I got to get a gaggle of new friends, and my nights were free because I didn't have kids anymore. Right. So I could play in a band at Palmer's Bar or something like that. Just something, some gig.
And Johnny, when you talk to your daughters and son now, what do they say about that time when they were watching you, you know, it sounds like you were depressed and sort of spiraling out of control. What do they say about watching you go through that and then seeing you get to a better place?
They got me through it. They really did. They got me through it. My daughter, Leora, just did a fantastic job making phone calls, taking me in when I was in a bad shape. Sobering me up. All three of them have been there for me. And they always tell me, like, I get Mother's Day cards.
Oh, Johnny, thank you for calling in and sharing your story. And I loved hearing you say, I'm a dad. Johnny talked about that sense of identity. Dr. Liz, what did you hear in his story?
Yes, super common, right? Like that loss of identity, that loss of that role, right? That role that you were so, you know, so rich into for 18 plus years. And, you know, when your last child goes off to college, you know, that role is shifted. It's not like you're not no longer their parent, mm-hmm. right? You're still their home base, even though they're afar. But that's definitely very common.
Mm-hmm. Babs, what do you hear in Johnny's story about his, you know, his sense of identity and just feeling, you know, lost and lonely?
Loneliness is the number one thing I hear from the women I work with in my course and in my Facebook group. I hear it every single day that they feel, you know, they're lonely for their kids, but often the friends that we make on the soccer sidelines, lacrosse, music, whatever, in our kids' extracurricular,
right.
Our friends for
circle.
A season.
Yeah.
They're friends for a season. They're lovely, lovely friends. It's wonderful for those years, but many people find those particular kid-based friendships slip away, and that is something they did not expect. So there's an extra sense of loss where this group that you shared everything with, sort of like, you know, the lunchroom friends at work, and you're not at work anymore, that's gone too. So I heard him, you know, re-find his mm-hmm. circle by reconnecting with this thing that he loved. For Johnny, it was music. And then he found his bandmates, and that became his crew. And I think that I hear that from women every single day, that they're lonely. They'd like to find a way to find new friends that are in their stage of life.
All right. We're talking about empty nesters and what that transition is like. Back to the phone lines in Minneapolis. Allison is on the line. Thank you for waiting, Allison. What did you want to share?
Yeah, thanks. I'm happy to be here. I just wanted to share or add to the conversation that, you know, this empty nesting thing it's sort of a two-step forward, one-step back situation. So there is an opportunity to work our way into the transition. I have two boys, 21 and 24, and, you know, they tend to go away, especially if they're seeking, you know, higher education or something, and then they come home for a summer, and then they go back. And so there's a little bit of time of sort of working through getting used to that, if you will. And that, for me, has been really helpful because as my oldest one really became self-sufficient, moved out, had a job, you know, now that's a whole different level of empty nesting, if you will, when they really, really don't need you, if you will, anymore. So,
Don't say that out loud.
I just mean it in such a different way, you know, and that's, of course, again, it's what our job is as parents, is to teach them to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it's steps. It steps down towards that that end goal.
Right. Well, it thank you, Allison. It helps me to hear other people, you know, have these strong emotions as well. Let's take another phone call in Grand Rapids. John is on the phone. John, are you an empty nester as well?
I am indeed. I have four daughters, and the last one just moved. I mean, I was like an earlier caller. I mean, I parented for over 30 years, you know, at home. And the last one just moved out to me a couple of years ago now, and some of them went off to college, but some of them, they all actually though moved and didn't come home for summers. They went and got apartments, and, you know. But anyways, I had a couple thoughts on it. One, like the last caller was saying, you know, it's our job as parents. It's the irony of parenting. When they're born, they can't survive without you, you know, for even a day. But your job is to slowly wean them off of you, you know. So when they learn how to do their own laundry, and when they learn how to, you know, when they get a job and earn their own money and stuff like that. And there's that process too, as they're growing, you know, where there comes a day where you don't need to get a babysitter anymore because they're old enough, you know, and those little steps. But then I used to joke with them, and this is a joke because I don't want to sound cold hearted, but I used to say, all of you on your 18th birthday are getting the same gift, some luggage, and I expect you to use it. You know?
Wow. Thanks, Dad.
But the truth is, they knew I was kidding, though. But the truth is that there's another way to look at it all, which is like you were talking about going to the grocery store and just needing the basket instead of the cart. And I know that feeling. I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm not picking up this food for her or whatever. But then on the other hand, I'd go home and say, you know what? I went to the grocery store and only spent $80, you know? Like,
it used to be $300 or something, right?
Yep,
four
exactly.
daughters.
Or, you know, it's like you can say, oh, you know, her dirty socks aren't on the floor anymore. I used to always have to get on her about picking up those socks. Or you can say, I didn't have to pick up any dirty socks today, you know?
Right.
And then I also like being proud of, you know, watching them. I'm proud of myself, actually, for helping them turn into really good humans. You know, they're kind and compassionate people, and, you know, proud of them for who they are. But just to see them, you know, take those steps. And some things I never thought about, because it's been so long since I moved out. Like, my one daughter was telling me, like, you know, they get all these ideas about living on their own. And then she's like, I didn't realize. She's like, I kind of forgot, like. She's like, all of a sudden, one day it's like, I don't have a can opener. I don't have a pizza cutter. You know, just learning those lessons of mm-hmm. life. And I've enjoyed my kids at all their stages. I have grandchildren now. One of my daughters just had a baby like 2 weeks ago. And I love seeing the little ones. But I see her, she's got a 6-year-old and a baby, and she's, you know, struggling, you know, everything. I keep telling her, like everybody tells you, you know, it's going to be just like that.
It goes
fast. Done, you know, so enjoy each stage. Enjoy the toddlers. Enjoy the preschoolers. You know, enjoy the high schoolers. And enjoy being an empty nester.
John, thank you so much. John in Grand Rapids. And I love what John said there. He mentioned the irony of parenting. Because in the beginning, they need you for everything. You can't take your eye off them. And then by the end of it, like, they don't. Or they'll tell you, we don't need you at all. So that is a huge shift to go through, Babs. I've found it. It's a lot.
It definitely is. And it is a lot to go through that shift of how much are you needed. And what I see with the women that I work with, and it would be true for dads too, who have been, you know, deeply, deeply invested in the daily job. When we hang on to the kids being our main daily sense of purpose, it causes this pushback. You know, they need that developmentally, like John's saying, you know, and also Allison said, step by step, they need to go fly there. You know, she said, you know, my little eaglets are flying. We need to let them fly. But when we are still so needy for them as our purpose, we cling to them, and it can cause a lot of tension,
right,
between the kids and parents.
Well, Dr. Liz, again, what do you think about how John described it, the irony of parenting? Because as infants, they require all your attention. And by the end, they want as little of you as they can get.
Most definitely. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, attachment theory says it, right? Like, we are our kids attached to us from the womb. But we, as parents, do our best to, you know, prepare them for the world outside of the home, right? So when we put in, especially as, you know, parents, we put in a lot of emotional and physical labor as parents. And so when it's time to let them fly, you know, that can still be hard, but, you know, and also can be an opportunity to reflect on joy. I love that John said that he enjoyed each transition, right? You enjoy as you give birth and they become toddlers and teenagers, and you enjoy those transitions, right? And just like this with empty nesting, right? You enjoy the fact that, okay, I've done my best. I've done the best I could to raise them and prepare them for the real world out there. And, you know, that's something to really be able to sit with.
In Roseville, we've got Alice on the phone. Hey there, Alice.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I'm so glad you're doing this program. My children have been gone for many, many years, but I will never forget the feeling I had dropping my daughter off at college. I was just devastated. And thinking why there should be a support group for people like me. There should be a support group for empty nesters. So this is great that you're doing this show.
Well, good. I'm glad that is resonating with you. And Babs, there should be a support group. What could you tell Alice about that?
Alice, there is. I have a free Facebook group called the Empty Nesters Joyful Purpose Club, and it is all about supporting moms through this journey, but really doing it from the lens of finding more joy and more purpose. So it exists out there, Alice, and I have people in my group, including Angela and others who've been empty nesters for a day and for decades. And it really depends on where you are in the steps and the transitions, as Dr. Liz has talked about.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. And in Maple Grove, let's talk to Rachel, who's on the phone. And Rachel, what did you want to share about this empty nesting experience?
Oh, hi, Angela. Thanks for taking my call. I wish you did this program, this topic every week. No, my kids are, I'm almost an empty nester, and I have been actually I've been going to therapy about transitions. I'm middle-aged, jobs, and for the purpose of my kids leaving. And I just want people to know it's okay. Don't feel shameful that you have those anxiety feelings, and just be proactive is what I'm saying. It's helping me to go to see my therapist once a week. My oldest is 20, so he's been gone, but I have a youngest at 16, so I still have a kid here, but I'm not crushing it. That, like they say, that's my whole thing. I watched something say, I'm crushing this empty nesting thing. I said, I'm not crushing it. I just want people to know it's okay to be that way.
So. Yes. Well, I appreciate you calling in and sharing that, Rachel. And a lot of it, too, is the time that we're living in. I mean, we can't forget about the pandemic. I mean, it won't allow us to forget about it. There's just so much change all at one time. And I think that is what has made the empty nest experience even harder for a lot of people. Are you seeing that, Dr. Liz?
Most definitely. When the pandemic first started last year, I got just so many referrals and people were really struggling. So on top of, you know, sending your kids off to college in the middle of a pandemic,
right.
I love that Rachel shed light to the importance of therapy. I'm a huge advocate. Of course, I'm biased because I'm a therapist myself. But it's just there is stigma around therapy. But I think it's really important to seek help if empty nesting is really affecting you to the point that you're isolating yourself or struggling. So,
And it can be easy to isolate yourself and just not want to talk about it. What is the danger of doing that?
Yeah, it can definitely leave you vulnerable to, you know, severe symptoms of depression or just other conflicts you may have. Depression is a big one. Anxiety is a big one. So that's what I was saying. I think it's really important to seek help as soon as you start feeling just really down and it's affecting your everyday functioning.
Let's take another phone call. In Scandia, we've got Travis on the phone. Good morning to you, Travis.
Good morning, Angela.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes. Are you an empty nester?
I'm actually the opposite. I'm just calling in to give a different perspective and to say thank you to all the empty nesters out there. I am a young adult, 34 years old, and now a new parent myself. And I think that this conversation is really important to have. And it's a good reminder. Oh, I want to be a good reminder for the parents out there, especially my parents, that you did a great job. And even though we're off on our own, doing our own thing, you helped us get here. We are only here because of you. And we thank you and we love you. We couldn't do this without all of you.
Travis. So, Travis, you're speaking for the young adults expressing gratitude. Thank you. Thank you. Did you worry about your parents when you first left?
Not only did I worry about it when I first left, but I worry about it still every day. I'm honest about that. I think about it every single day. And I think that your guest said earlier that it's really easy for parents to kind of cling and to, I kind of see it a little bit like codependence, is as awful as that sounds. But I get now as a young parent myself that that kids grow up and kids, you know, you have kids of your own and you have all these feelings that your parents have and it's, you know, you don't believe it. Everybody says you're going to feel the same thing as a young parent and
it's connection, right? It's just connection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. There's that connection that you have with your kid and it'll never go away. But I think it's just a reminder to those parents, those empty nesters, that, we couldn't have done it without you. And, we appreciate everything that you've given us, and we still love you. We still want to hear from you, even though we're doing our own thing. And we might push back a little bit against that codependence, but it doesn't mean that we don't love and respect you.
Thank you, Travis from Scandia, making all the moms and dads cry this morning. Thank you, Travis. Dr. Liz, he's kind of left me speechless there. I appreciate that but this is part of it as well, right? We have a responsibility to manage our emotions and get, you know, to be whole and to be well in this experience, because mm-hmm. our adult children need us still to be healthy for them.
Most definitely. We always encourage our parents, you know, to model that healthy, you know, emotional regulation for our kids. And so, like I was saying earlier, it's easy to project that anxiety on your kids. And as Babs was saying, like, this is, you know, their experience as well. They may be scared. They may be anxious themselves. So that extra anxiety, you know, can not really be, you know, helpful. So it's just really important, even as you prepare, you know, for that transition, to find life, you know, outside of that role. It's a beautiful role to have, but find, you know, hobbies, go back into the interests that you love, the hobbies that you weren't able to do because you were so busy being a parent, so that you can really have a smooth transition to this, right?
I want to make sure I get this question in. Is empty nest syndrome, is it different for divorced parents or single parents? Because in that scenario, maybe there's been some change, there's been some separation. Have you found a difference there?
You know, I have not in my practice, but I definitely, you know, would say, or I would assume that for divorced parents, it may be they could be vulnerable to maybe depression or isolation, just not having that spousal support. Not every divorced parent, you know, may go through that, but some divorced parents may, right? And just having that extra isolation, they were probably used to seeing their kids on a regular basis, and now they don't. But I do think it's important that they still know that they can keep in touch. They can still, you know, it's not like they're not a parent anymore, but that they can still parent from afar. Mm-hmm. But I want to reiterate that it's really important to seek out help and seek out, you know, maybe other loved ones and share your feelings with them, or, you know, a therapist would be really helpful for them.
And Babs, what about you in the support groups that you lead or the activities that you help organize? Have you seen anything different for divorced parents?
Where I would see it is, I mean, I think it can be a both and. So parents that have, you know, split custody, I think there's possibly a greater ability to keep those outside relationships, keep those independent interests going. So there can be the opportunity to actually be more ready to move in. Where I see it is a single parent who's the full-time single parent. Johnny talked about that. John talked about that, where, and Travis indicated that too, of that codependency where your whole life is exclusively your team, you know, the mm-hmm. the three of you, the four of you as a team. And I hear that. I have some clients currently who express that being particularly difficult. They recognize, as Travis was saying, it's not healthy, and all their whole team is working to find independent senses of purpose that are separate from them as a group.
Let's talk with another listener right now. Let's go to Fargo, where Nancy's on the phone. Nancy, thank you for waiting.
Yes, hi there.
Hi, go right ahead.
Well, I think that sometimes we need to try, these are always hard things in life, but we try to call it an adventure and try not to think it's going to be necessarily a sad thing. I'm thinking that, like, I'm in a full circle kind of thing, because right now, I'm a single parent. I have two disabled sons and a daughter who's 10. And my oldest and youngest are 10 years apart. So I'm navigating, helping my son, who I think eventually he'll be able to be on his own. He's 20. He's going to college. But I have to help him so much because of his disability. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, my sister and I are helping my mother with living on her own for the first time. Mm. So she just moved out of my sister's home 2 days ago. And, you know, she's like the empty nester for the first time at 74. Mm-hmm. Because when we were younger, she's divorced. She never had that kind of issue with us leaving home. But now at this age, She does.
So Nancy, I think Nancy represents a lot of folks who are sort of in the middle, like soon to be empty nesters or new empty nesters, but now they're in a role of taking care of their aging parents. And Dr. Liz, is that something that you see or hear as you work with clients as well?
Most definitely. We all go through those transitions from infanthood to all the way up to now caring for your aging parents. Right. Each transition definitely has its share of challenges and stressors, for sure. And I think we can't, you know, always prepare, right? We can't predict the future, but I just think we do the best we can every day, right? I tell my clients all the time, you can only do the best you can. The best you can. The best you can do is the best you can do, right?
So I love that advice. And Babs, in our final minute here, what have you seen as just the value of having a support group and facilitating discussions among empty nesters? What do people seem to get out of just talking about it?
Oh, just like all of us, it's always good to know you're not the only one.
Right.
It's good to have others, especially if you're feeling a little bit lonely and disconnected. It's great to have a group. And then it's really helpful to see models of people who are finding their way through. And what is it that they're doing? How are they rediscovering their sense of self and finding a new purpose outside of and in addition to motherhood? So just like in any group, to, you know you're not alone, find your way and see models of what it can look like when you figure it out.
Well, I appreciate hearing from both of our guests today and all of the great calls that we got from our listeners who shared their stories. This has been so helpful to me, a new empty nester, as well as the new host of the 9 a.m. hour here on NPR News. Our time is up for today. Thanks again to our guests, Babs Plunkett, a life coach here in the Twin Cities, as well as Elizabeth Adedokun, who's a family therapist in Edina. She goes by Dr. Liz. Today's conversation was produced by NPR's Susan Davis. Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. If you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.